Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 269, being recorded on January 14th of the year 2001. The title is Way Too Much Monkey Business. We've been talking about the origin of AIDS. We've been talking about biological warfare and genetic engineering. We've been talking about viral contaminants of vaccines. And in particular, we've been visiting with some of the remarkable work that's been done by Ed Haslam, the author of the vitally important recent book, Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus, the subtitle, The Story of an Underground Medical Laboratory, published in soft cover by the Wordsworth Press, copyright 1995. I interviewed Ed Haslam on October 29th of the year 2000. We've been talking about research which would indicate that, in fact, the origin of AIDS did not take place in Africa, as misreported, in my opinion, and Ed's, in the book The River. The River would appear to have quite a few red herrings in it. And we're going to return to the subject of genetic engineering, biological warfare, viral contaminants, diseases, cancers, and disinformation about the origin of AIDS. Once again, this interview is from October 29th of the year 2000. Let's go back to our visit with Ed Haslam. Now, we were discussing a chimp named Marilyn, and we were also discussing a book called The River, and you were presenting some information that indicated conclusively that somebody, at least, Dr. Colston, was very much aware of the viral origin of AIDS long before that officially became part of the public record. I wonder, Ed, if I could ask you to briefly recapitulate what we talked about during the concluding portion of the first half of the broadcast, and then proceed to a discussion of The River, bearing in mind that most people are probably not familiar with that book and its hypothesis.
Okay, on the Marilyn issue, there's a primate laboratory in southern New Mexico adjacent to the White Sand Missile Range run by a Dr. Colston, who I believe is now dead, but in 1995 he admitted in an interview in one of the Albuquerque papers, meaning the Albuquerque Tribune and the Albuquerque Journal, that since the very first days of the discovery of AIDS, meaning San Diego in 1981 or 1982 at the worst scenario, he had been infecting primates in his care, particularly female primates, to see if the AIDS disease could be transferred between mother and child. The fact that one of those chimpanzees died in 1984, and that 13 years later her cell samples were sent to a researcher who was unaware of this background, and that researcher concluded that they had found HIV in a chimpanzee and used that to conclude that the origin of AIDS was a chimpanzee, is a bold-faced scientific mistake.
That was very diplomatically phrased, by the way, Ed. Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you. And there are scientists sitting in Los Alamos, New Mexico today, who are working on projects to prove the results of her research through complex computer models, who I have already notified of this problem. And if they release information with these misconceptions in there, I will be happy to point out to them that I've previously notified them of the problem. Now, back to The River. In my book, Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus, I presented a laundry list of theories about the origin of AIDS. One of those theories was that AIDS had somehow come out of the polio vaccine. And I credit Tom Curtis, in an article published in Rolling Stone magazine, I believe it was in 1987, it may have been 89, but it's in the late 80s, with the origin of that theory. Tom Curtis was jumped on from 27 different buildings, and that theory was quickly quashed. I found it very interesting that almost 12 years later, a British journalist proposing the same theory came forward and was granted major publication contracts for an 800-page book for a theory that was already previously discounted. And I found this particularly interesting because I was offered the same theory in the process of writing Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus, and I turned it down because it had already been presented, it had already been disproved. So if one has a theory that's already been presented and already been disproved, then why would a major New York publisher publish an 800-page book, put a lot of money behind promoting it, only to lead to some sort of official scientific examination which was predetermined to disprove it. I mean, we're talking about a monkey trial. We're talking about creating a mock trial which we conjure up expectations of things that are easily disprovable, get everybody's expectations up, and then disprove them. And we can use that, or they can use that, as an excuse to blow off the concerns of all these sort of well-intentioned but misguided scientific radicals like Ed Haslam on an issue that frankly never should have been discussed in the first place. And in the meantime, they use that as an excuse to destroy the remaining stock of polio vaccine.
Oh, I was not aware of that. See, I read the articles about the chimpanzee/polio vaccine/AIDS theory, and I wondered what was behind it. I was not aware. So they have now destroyed all of the old polio vaccine stuff?
Just about all of it. But thank God for Carboni. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Carboni.
Now, this, by the way, is Dr. Michele Carboni.
Yeah, who's a world-class expert in DNA. He comes out of Italy. He's here in the United States at the request of the National Institute of Health. He works out of the Loyola University in Chicago.
And by the way, is the central feature of the article from the Atlantic Monthly's issue of February of 2000 that we alluded to in the first half of the discussion. Go ahead.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Ed.
Well, this...
talking about the destruction of the original stock of the vaccine.
Yeah, Carboni finds some doctor in Chicago who was reluctant to give out the polio vaccine in the 50s and left it in the back of his refrigerator.
Wow.
And found basically a virgin stash of a polio vaccine,
mm-hmm.
at least according to the accounts that I've read.
Right.
And so what we have, I mean, what I want all the listeners to really focus in on is there is a wild set of information going on about the contamination of vaccines. We haven't gotten into stuff like the Hep B vaccine, you know?
Right.
By
the way, we have spoken about the hepatitis B vaccine in conjunction with AIDS in past discussions, including a panel discussion with yourself, Dr. Leonard Horowitz, Dr. Alan Cantwell, and also Dr. Garth Nicholson, done almost exactly 4 years ago today, Ed.
But Dave, help me with a thought here.
Right.
Did I raise the issue at that time that the American blood supply was buying blood from the Chinese penal system?
I don't recall that being discussed at that time, but it's possible that it has been 4 years. I don't recall that in connection with that huge broadcast. It was a two-hour marathon during our
My guess is I probably did not, because I think that information came to me since then.
I don't have any memory trace of it, but that's not necessarily indicative. But I was not aware. In fact, I'll tell you, there's a reason why I didn't know about that. I wasn't aware that we were doing that up until very recently. We are buying blood from the that's the People's Republic of China penal system?
That is what I was informed verbally by one of the doctors in the loop.
Oh, delightful. Well, of course, go ahead, Ed. I don't want to just say that. This is the first I knew about that, and I can't say it exactly sets me to doing it.
Well, I can't say that I'm 100% sure it's happening, okay? But I will say that I was informed by somebody who had proximity to those issues, who had the credentials to know about that information, blah, blah, blah,
mm-hmm.
that was going on. And when I was presented with the governmental mandate to inoculate my own children with this vaccine, and I started to inquire into this vaccine and where it came from.
The vaccine being the hepatitis B vaccine.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
And Hep B is transmitted exactly the same way as AIDS is.
Right. It's a blood and sexually transmitted disease.
That's right, which is primarily a regional and ethnic disease involving Orientals and American Indians, particularly on the northwest coast of the United States, and is transmitted through prostitution in those environments. Now, why does that have to be set out as a national vaccine that every junior high school kid in America has to go to, or they are denied the right to their education. I mean, that is awfully heavy-handed technique.
It was strange, Ed, and enlighten me if you would. My only previous awareness of a hepatitis B vaccine had to do with vaccinating gays in New York City. There are questions about the experimental hepatitis B vaccine having been contaminated with HIV. That's the only awareness that I had of hepatitis B being a relatively common disease was among the gay population of this country. And yet now they have decided that it is absolutely essential for all school children to be vaccinated against this disease.
They will not let you into seventh grade without it.
Really?
And what is really interesting to me about this, Dave, is that this disease is transmitted exactly the way that AIDS is.
Mm-hmm.
So is the hepatitis B vaccine program a warm-up for the AIDS vaccine program?
Well, it's an interesting question. Obviously, I can't answer that. One wonders what sort of research is being done with regard to an AIDS vaccine. AIDS has proved to be, obviously, a huge windfall in terms of pharmacological research. The potential profits to the person or to the element that develops an AIDS vaccine are incalculable. But, I have not thought about that. What I was more worried about was what is going to be in the vaccine that they give to the kids and what's going to happen later. I'm sure a concern you share.
What I was particularly concerned about was the fact that when I called the president of the State Board of Education
mm-hmm.
about this, she basically disclaimed all knowledge of it, saying that it was being forced upon them by the public health people. And when I tried to track down who the public health people were that were making these decisions, all I got was a bunch of pass-the-buck information that went back to CDC, all of which claims, publicly, on at least on their website, that they have no national policy for enforcement of this thing. So what we have is a bunch of shadow government going on, which is leading to conclusions that your child cannot go to school unless they comply with these public health things, when we have a rather large and conspicuous history of hasty public health decisions leading to major public health problems, with no real arena or forum for public debate over the issue. That's what I think is a problem.
One of the things that strikes me, and this is in the category of pure rumination, Ed, but the polio vaccine, the contaminated vaccine, was administered to what has become the largest population group in the United States, namely the baby boomers. This hepatitis B vaccine, whether or not there's any connection whatsoever, and a number of conspiratorial possibilities suggest themselves, this is being administered to people who would be in the age group of being the children of the baby boomers. And what I wonder about, and it is that we are engaged in a huge national political debate, and maybe this is not a question that you're in a position to provide an answer to or would feel comfortable with. If so, just we'll move on to another topic. But, you know, as we're speaking on 10/29/2000, we're coming down to the gun lap, so to speak, of a very closely fought election campaign. And some of the issues that are on the front burner, such as medical care, providing for pharmaceutical drugs for the elderly, Social Security, a number of things bear on the issue of health, longevity, population, and the governmental role in helping to care for people who are infirm or in need of medical assistance. And obviously there has been a strong tendency toward basically privatizing or eliminating government supports for various types of health measures. I'm wondering if perhaps a large population group, the one that our children are going to turn out to be, will find themselves with some sort of nasty wee beastie in this vaccine that they've been forced to take, and whether that will perhaps eliminate folks who might otherwise go on to collect Social Security or Medicare or something else that the forces of reaction really don't want to spend any money on. And this is pure rumination, obviously, but I wonder about that.
Well, let me give you my concluding comments here, and then I'm going to have to go cook dinner for my children.
Right.
And my comments are that I think we need a national debate on our public health policy, including our vaccines. And this issue that you raise of privatization, from what? From governmental intervention into healthcare, which goes back to when? That's 1964. That's LBJ. That's Medicare. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Why did all that happen right then? And what are the implications of all this? And the point is, if we do not have a national debate on this subject, then we're left with a bunch of flag waving and patriotic speeches and vote for me because I have a good head of hair or whatever.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
And I really think to anybody that's listening to this program, what I would like you to take away from this is that we all have a vested interest in this,
mm-hmm.
not only in our personal health, but in the health of our spouses and our children and our parents and people that are close to us. And that we need to get very serious about getting these subjects on the table. And not in some kind of inquisition accountability issue, but let's figure out what the problems are so we can get on with the solutions.
And I would stress that people should do what they can to get the word out about the issues we're talking about. In particular, I think that as depressing as all of this is, with a trial vaccine using the Atlantic Monthly article called antisense RNA, and with the apparent success that that trial vaccine had, it would seem to me that there's at least a possibility that sufficient public pressure could get this thing marketed, and it could help to relieve at least some of the afflictions that are currently weighing us down. I mean, we could just prostate and breast cancer, to vaccinate against those things would be to lift a tremendous burden from the lives of an awful lot of people.
Yeah, about 1 out of 10.
That's enough. That's quite a few people. And one of the things that you point out in Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus is that the SV40 viral contaminant was the focal point of much of the early research into genetic engineering.
Yeah, they knew about the 50s. There's no question in my mind about that.
So the information that comes from Maryland is not exactly what we're going to want to focus on, Maryland being that chimp.
And that chimp was in an Air Force laboratory. Once again, that was an interview conducted on the One Step Beyond program that I do in Northern California on October 29th of the year 2000. And the interview was with Ed Haslam, the author of Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus, the story of an underground medical laboratory, published in soft cover by the Wordsworth Press, copyright 1995. Now, jumping to the present being, for the benefit of people who hear this program on tape, January 14th of the year 2001, we're going to take a look at an article which made the front pages of many newspapers, including the New York Times of Friday, January 12th of the year 2001. This is an article by Gina Colata, K-O-L-A-T-A. It's headlined, Monkey Born with Altered Cells in Gene Engineering Experiment. Bear in mind the experiments were being conducted in the early 80s by the aforementioned Dr. Colston, aforementioned in that Ed Haslam interview. This article reads in part as follows. Scientists in Portland, Oregon report that they have inserted a foreign gene into a monkey egg, fertilized the egg, and produced a baby monkey with the added gene in its cells. The scientists say they believe that this is the first time researchers have used techniques of genetic engineering to alter an unfertilized egg of a primate, intending that the change be passed on to future generations. The gene, which comes from a jellyfish, is only a marker. It causes cells to make a protein that glows under a fluorescent light. And in this case, though the monkey's cells have the gene, they are not making the protein, the researchers report. Further, it is too soon to tell whether the monkey's sperm will contain the added gene. Now, why are they worrying about this? Well, skipping down, we read, Dr. Shatton, that was the Dr. Gerald Shatton who authored the report, Dr. Shatton, S-C-H-A-T-T-E-N, said his ultimate goal was to create colonies of monkeys that had been genetically modified to develop a human disease. Then, he said, he could use the animals to study new treatments for humans with the disease. Bear in mind that once diseases begin crossing species barriers, they have a tendency to keep on doing that, and that the contamination of the vaccines, viral vaccines, have frequently been the viruses themselves grown on monkey kidneys. Then when the virus for the vaccine was extracted, other viruses, monkey viruses, against which human beings had no immunity, they were extracted as well, hence the contamination of the polio vaccine with the deadly cancer-causing virus SV40. In addition to Ed Haslam's important work on that, check the aforementioned Atlantic Monthly article from February of the year 2000. Speaking of vaccines, speaking of genetic engineering, bear in mind also that the distinction between offensive and defensive biological warfare research is entirely academic. If you're researching how pathogenic organisms cause disease of one kind or another, offensive and defensive classifications are completely academic and arbitrary. The process is the same no matter what. In that context, consider the following. This from the Wall Street Journal of Thursday, January 11th of the year 2001. This article is by Vanessa Fuhrmans, F-U-H-R-M-A-N-S, a Wall Street Journal reporter. It's headlined, Bayer and Millennium say genomic drug that they developed fights tumors. By the way, Bayer, of course, is one of the many companies, one of the four companies, I should say, that came out of the IG Farm and Chemical Combine, the backbone of not only Nazi war production in World War II, but also the backbone of Hitler's political funding that helped bring him to power. Returning once again to this article from the Wall Street Journal of 1-11-2001, Bayer AG and Millennium Pharmaceuticals Incorporated said they have developed a cancer-fighting compound using a gene they identified that causes tumors to form. The compound is the first genomic-based drug candidate to come out of the $465 million partnership Bayer forged with the Cambridge, Massachusetts biotechnology firm in September of 1998. Bear in mind that if you keep it, if you study how to cause tumors and you find a gene that does that, you can also use that same knowledge to cause tumors as well as to create a vaccine. One wonders whether perhaps that has a, that precise technology has been developed. There is substantive evidence that techniques of deliberately infecting people with cancer as a weapon of assassination were not only being researched, but from Freedom of Information Act documents, we know that a technique was developed as early as 1954. Also, on the subject of vaccines and some of the accidental, unforeseen conclusions or consequences, I should say, of those vaccines, consider the following. This was researched for us by a member of the listening audience. This comes from the Yorkshire Post of January 13th of the year 2001. This is also accessed, this has been accessed, I should say, from the Yorkshire Post's website at www.ypn.co.uk. This article is headlined, The Port Over Vaccine Sparks Off Political Row as Campaigners Say Figures Will Not Change Their Opposition. Subtitled, MMR Jab Safe, Says 14-Year Study. Health ministers were embroiled in a row with Tories last night over a new report on the safety of the controversial MMR vaccine. The government traded blows with the shadow health secretary, Dr. Liam Fox, accusing him of being purely opportunistic, unquote, for warning of a possible measles epidemic. The 14-year study from Finland, the largest yet carried out, concluded that the 3-in-1 vaccination against measles, mumps, and rubella did not cause autism and bowel disorders. Anti-vaccination campaigners have long claimed that MMR leads to the conditions, and yesterday said the report had done nothing to allay their fears. The report showed the vaccine did produce a small percentage of serious side effects, but the Department of Health said the findings meant parents' worries should be eased. The study, which started in 1982, was backed by the pharmaceutical company Merck, which produces the MMR vaccine. I would also add that it was Merck that produced the experimental hepatitis B vaccine, which appears to have been implicated in the development of AIDS. And I would also note that Merck has a long history of involvement with biological warfare research. And again, broadcasts that are available from Spitfire go into that. Skipping down in this Yorkshire Post article from 1/13/2001, with MMR, children are given a combined jab against the three diseases at 12 to 15 months, and a second booster dose when between 3 and 5 years old. Around 2,000 families in Britain have taken legal action claiming their children have been damaged by the jab, many believing that it has triggered autism. A member of the anti-vaccination group JABS, Marilyn Smith, said, quote, "When you've got a child, it's the most precious thing in the world, and no amount of figures can change the concerns we have about MMR. Quote, "I have people phoning me up saying their child was fine one day, and then it had the MMR jab, and the next day, it was as if they didn't know them anymore." Again, quoting, "That is the evidence I see, and I don't think any report which is shoved down our throats will change the concerns people have." Unquote. Well, I'm not in a position to make any sort of substantive evaluation of the risks or possible benefits of the MMR jab, but obviously the precipitous rushing to market of medical products, whether they're prescription drugs or pharmaceutical or vaccines, is not something that we want to engage in. There needs to be rigorous regulation and testing. Don't look for the administration of George II to impose increased regulation on the pharmaceuticals industry. Bear in mind also the tremendous perils of genetic engineering and how those can be put to work for not the purpose of healing human beings, but the purpose of getting rid of them. I've referred to numerous broadcasts that deal with the subject of genetic engineering and the related subject of bacteriological or virological warfare. Those broadcasts are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. That's S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, one word. They're located at P.O. Box 1179, Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. Email is mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. There's a list of and description of the various tapes available on the Spitfire, on the Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. And these For the Record segments are being archived now on Real Audio by an East Coast radio station, WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey. You can access the archived audio files for the Record at wfmu.org/Dave Emory, D-A-V-E-E-M-O-R-Y. And you can also listen to the weekly radio show that I do on KFJC-FM at kfjc.org. That's on at 7 to 10 p.m. Pacific time and 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific time, 7 to 10 p.m. on Sunday, 6 to 7 on Thursday. That concludes For the Record program number 269. Way Too Much Monkey Business, being recorded on January 14th of the year 2001. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.